How amazing would it be if we could leave this place saying that, if ever I loved you, it's now, Jesus. I think that is the aim of this message tonight, especially we'll be focusing on verse 15 to 19 of that chapter we just read. And the focus is the love of Jesus for us, but also our love for him in response. That is the focus of tonight. That is the heartbeat of this message, and that's the heartbeat of Christianity. Love for Jesus and his love for us. Love is at the heart of everything that we do for the Lord. So it's funny because firstly, as I was here this morning, listening to Dan preach, there was Jesus and Peter in focus again. We didn't plan this. There was no secret meeting between me and Dan that he was going to do the first part of Peter's denial and fall and I'm going to do the aftermath. Just seems to be the way the Lord has worked it out, that I'm going to be looking at now the aftermath of what happened when Peter denied Christ. This morning, we heard that he was warned in advance that he was going to fall. He was also warned about watching and praying, but it still didn't stop him. He fell. It was hard. And now what we've read in this chapter is Jesus coming to meet him. And we see a window into their conversation. But this is the last chapter of John. But this isn't the climax, because the previous chapter of John, 20, that is the climax. Thomas declaring to Jesus, "My Lord, my God." That is the climax. Jesus is God in the flesh. God has come down to earth as a man. And it's been declared in all its glory. Thomas saw it with his own eyes. He believed. But then we see at the end of chapter 20, John writes, "But these are written so that you may believe." So this is for us too. So Thomas saw it, but this has been written down for us. But John doesn't end there, because it would sound like a nice end to the gospel there. This is why it's written, Jesus is God, finish. But he doesn't end there. He writes another chapter. It's like he's saying, wait, there's something more. Jesus has revealed himself again to his disciples, read in verse 1. This time, he's revealed as the God of grace, particularly. We've already seen he's God over all, powerful, he's deserving of our worship. We see Thomas worshipping him. But here, he simply appears to his disciples, makes breakfast, has breakfast with them. They're hungry, they're tired, they've been fishing all night, no success. And he comes and he just provides breakfast and sits with them. Not just that, he has one of them particularly on his heart, Peter. Jesus is the type of God that will leave the 99 and go and find that one sheep. Peter, as we are going to see, failed Jesus. We've seen it this morning. We're going to go into more detail how all of this happened, why, and what should the response and how should this all work out? How does the story end? So like I said, verse 15 to 19, we'll read it again. And we're going to see the exchange between Jesus and Peter. And we're going to see what this has to say to us as believers, but also those of you here tonight who may not know Jesus. He might be a stranger to you. We're going to see what this has to say to you. What can we take from this? This is a passage that gives us hope. I hope that's something that comes out tonight. Anyone here who feels they've failed, maybe they feel there's no way back, this passage provides hope. Because if Peter could fall in the way that he did and be received back in the way that he did, then surely that goes for any of us tonight. And we can put ourselves in Peter's shoes, because he's an apostle, yes, but he's human. And he's revealed as all his failures are on show here. Nothing's hidden. He's not this wonderful, perfectly painted Christian man with all smiles, suits, none of that. This is raw. He's raw and human here. We can relate to, if you think about through the Gospels, when he's quick to speak, sometimes slow to think. It's not all there for us to see. And I wonder if you feel maybe when he fell, maybe you can see yourself in that fall. I certainly can in certain points in my life. So that's what we need to do tonight, is we need to put ourselves in Peter's shoes and we need to try and learn from his experience. But yes, in this passage, we see Peter and he reminds us of our sin. But I hope by the end of the night we see Jesus, because Jesus is in view here as well. And it's his love that shines through. So let's read it again. We're going to read verse 15 to 19. That is going to be our focus tonight. We'll read it again and try and get our bearings on what's going on and the conversation that they have. So So they've had breakfast. Verse 15, when they finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, feed my lambs. He said to him a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my sheep. He said to him the third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he asked him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. This he said to show by what kind of death he was going to glorify God. And after this, he said to him, follow me. So, in light of that, we're going to be looking first at Peter. We're going to zoom in on him and look at his love for Jesus and his particularly his failed love for Jesus. Then we're going to look at Jesus and look and thank God that Jesus doesn't love us like we love him. Jesus didn't love Peter as Peter loved Jesus. That's what we're going to look at next. Then we're going to finally look at the response that Peter had to give as a result of Jesus' love and the response that we should give. So that's where we're going to go, from Peter to Jesus and then back to Peter. And in all of that, hopefully we see ourselves. So, firstly, Simon Peter. Let's focus on him. He's a man with two names. Why is that? Sometimes he's called Simon, sometimes he's called Peter. Sometimes he's called Simon Peter. What do you call him? Well, his name was originally Simon. So before he met Jesus, he was Simon. But when he met Jesus, Jesus changed his name to Peter, which meant rock. And this represented the change in man because he'd met Christ. Now, it's interesting here that Jesus calls him Simon in verse 15. And every time he asks the question, he's referring to him as Simon. This may appear confusing because by now, at this point in the gospel, we know Peter is Peter. So I believe Jesus is calling him Simon here because he's making Peter remember who he was before he met Jesus. He was a different man. Let's go back briefly to the account where Peter met Jesus. And we're going to turn quickly to Luke 5. And we're going to read from verse 3 to verse 11. So verse 3, Jesus is getting into one of the boats, which was Simon's. He asked him to put out a little from the land, and he sat down and taught the people from the boat. And when he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. And Simon answered, Master, we toiled all night and took nothing, but at your word I'll let down the nets. And when they had done this, they enclosed a large number of fish, and their nets were breaking. They signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them, and they came and filled the boat so that they began to sink. But when Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. For he and all who were with him were astonished at the catch of fish that they had taken. And so also were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. And Jesus said to Simon, do not be afraid. From now on you will be catching men. And when they had brought their boats to land, they left everything and followed him. I wonder if you notice similarities there, because John 21, there's lots of similarities. Same scene, same Lord, same disciples, a boat, a failed catch of nothing, no fish, and then suddenly a miracle catch of fish. There's subtle differences, but there's lots of similarities. Now, Luke 5 is the point where Jesus gets into Simon's boat. Physically, he gets in, but I would say there's a metaphorical thing here as well, because this was the moment where the direction of Simon's life changed forever. Simon, the sinful man, as he called himself here in verse 8, would become Peter the rock. And this speaks to all of us, because we all begin as Simons, strangers to God. Peter's realization that he's a sinful man when he met Jesus should be ours. We're all born into this world corrupted, that's for sure. Turn on the news, I think it's pretty clear to say that we're not living as we should. We're complete strangers to God. We're corrupted by our sin. We're lost in darkness. The Bible uses strong words to describe our state because of sin. It actually describes us literally as walking corpses. We're spiritually dead. We might be breathing, walking around, but we're walking corpses. Mike McNeil has picked up on that on his branding with Wake the Dead. And I think it's true. Because when you go outside and you say to people, do you want life? Jesus gives life. People will answer, we've got life, actually. We're living, we're breathing. But do we realize that we're spiritually dead? But the point here is that God closes the gap. Simon's there, fisherman, but God comes to him. Jesus comes to Simon. And even now, even through the preaching of this word, Jesus is holding his hands out to you. So Jesus is calling people every day. He's the shepherd calling sheep. And he's still actively doing that today. So that's the point. That Simon was a stranger to Jesus. He lived with no reference to Jesus. He'd never met Jesus. But Jesus came to Simon. He had Simon on his heart. So what about Peter then? We briefly looked at Simon, the man before he met Jesus. What about now that he's Peter? Because Simon failed to live for Christ. He didn't know Christ. He was a stranger. But what about now that he's Peter? Peter's met with Jesus. He's Peter the rock. So surely Peter would live faithfully. Maybe Simon didn't, but maybe now Peter's a believer, he's a follower of Jesus. Maybe now there'll be different fruit in his life. Well, that's the question, because he left everything to follow Jesus. He spent 3 years with Jesus. He witnessed the miracles, the transfiguration on the mountain, the glory. Imagine the glory that he witnessed on that mountain. He even professed Jesus to be the Christ. So you'd expect this guy's got to be faithful. This guy's never going to fall. But only moments after Jesus' arrest, he fails miserably. He can't even admit he knows Jesus to a servant girl. The failure couldn't be emphasized more. He flat out denied Christ not just once, but 3 times. And Jesus even warned him in advance he'd do so, and that still didn't stop him. The fall couldn't be more dramatic. And it came not long after he was ready to draw the sword to defend Jesus. The inconsistency here is glaring, and it must have been humiliating for Peter. You can imagine as Jesus is saying, do you love me, Peter? Do you love me? Do you love me? The number 3 is reminding him of the denials. The charcoal fire they're sitting in having breakfast, that would have reminded him. It was all flashbacks to that horrible moment. It must have been burned into his mind. And it's hard because when Peter is asked here, do you love Jesus? He says yes. But his actions in denying Jesus suggested the exact opposite. He must have thought, how could Jesus ever receive me again? Now imagine a husband cheating on a wife and she asks him, do you love me? Would you believe them? Would you believe them if they said yes? Well, this is what's amazing here, because Jesus knows all things and he still receives Peter again. But Simon Peter here is characterized by failure, because we see Simon was a sinful man, as he called himself, before he met Christ. Even after he meets Jesus, he still fails. He's characterized by failure. Do we see ourselves in him? Do we see ourselves in Simon, the old man? Do we see that we were once strangers to God? Maybe some of us still are tonight. Do we see ourselves in Peter? Have you had that Simon to Peter experience in your life? Has Jesus met with you? Has he changed you? Has he transformed you? Are you following him? Maybe you feel you've continually let him down as a believer. Maybe you're broken by that tonight. Well, firstly, I'd like to say that's a good sign if you're bothered by that. Because we should be bothered by our sin. And we should be humbled by our sin. And we see that in Peter. Firstly, Peter was humbled by his sin. When Peter's asked the 3 do you love me questions, you might imagine the old Peter, as we've seen earlier on in the gospel, saying, yes, Lord, you know I love you. Don't you remember that time I cut that guy's ear off? Don't you remember that time that I said you're the Christ? I love you much more than these other disciples. You might have imagined that kind of answer maybe. But now there's a quietness to Peter. He's humbled. He can only say, yes, Lord, you know all things. He couldn't prove himself anymore. He had no reason to prove himself. But he was also bothered by his sin. He was grieved by his fall. We see it in this chapter, verse 17, when he's asked a 3rd time, do you love me? He's grieved. But But not just then, when he actually, immediately after those three denials, we read in Matthew 26 that he went out and wept bitterly. He was broken by his sin. If we're Christians here tonight, we must have gone through that same humbling experience in some way. Because to come to Christ in the first place, we must be aware of our sin. Otherwise, why would we come to him? Why, if we don't see our need for a saviour, we would never have come. But it's not just when we first come to him that we experience humbling. We should continue to experience it as we grow. Because more and more our sin will be revealed. More and more we'll see our need for saving. The fact Peter is called Simon here was a reminder for him and for us that the old man remains in Christians. There is a tension. We're a work in progress. We're not perfect yet. And this inconsistency can be so frustrating. We love Christ, but our actions suggest sometimes the exact opposite. I think that's one of the hardest things in the Christian life to accept. It has been for me personally. But the question is, are you grieved by this? Does your remaining sin bother you? Do you want nothing more than to fight sin, to live for Christ? If that's the case, then it's actually a sign that he's working in you. But what should we do about this problem? Because we're imperfect people. I think even a non-Christian tonight would admit that we're not perfect. What do we do about this? We all feel guilt about things deep down, even if we don't admit it. And the world around us tries to offer solutions to this. I don't know if you've heard examples, but let me give two brief examples of how the world will try and fix this problem of our human nature, our fallen, failed human nature. One route could be, don't worry about it. Tell yourself it's okay. Think positively. If you think you're great, you'll be great. Just tell yourself you're a powerful human being, and you will be. It's all in the mind. Convince yourself sin isn't a big deal. Everyone's doing it. I tried that before I came to Christ. I tried every option the world gave. Positive thinking. None of it worked because God was already showing me who I really was. He was already showing me the truth. I couldn't run away. Maybe not that then. Maybe world religion. Fix it yourself. Strain to be holy. You can do good enough. Your best is good enough. Just keep trying your best. Again, is that the answer? The common link between all these options is it puts us at the center. It says we need to change something. But Jesus exposes the depth of our problem by saying, the problem is in here. It's the evil in us that's the problem. So how can we be the solution? We need to turn from ourselves. Peter needed a hope. We need a hope. We need to turn away from ourselves and look to someone else. Jesus says, look to me. Thankfully, he doesn't treat us as we treat him. He does not give as the world gives. God is perfect and his love is perfect and his love is displayed perfectly in Jesus. So ironically, this passage may at first seem all about Peter and what Peter should do and how he should love. But actually, it's a love of Jesus that shines through in this passage. Look at how Jesus even came to Peter with grace. He didn't come to Peter and say, how did you deny me? How could you do such a thing? He doesn't say any of that. He just says, do you love me? And for every one of Peter's denials, Jesus helped him reaffirm his love. That's why he asked him three times. Jesus didn't want Peter to dwell on his failures. He knew what Peter needed to get back on his feet. And in asking, do you love me, he was actually showing Peter grace. Because the love of Jesus makes it possible for us to move on from failure. The death of Jesus makes it possible for us to live in peace and joy. Let's look at how this love is displayed for us. So now we're going to look at Jesus. And we're going to look at four things about his love for us. Firstly, it's a love that is undeserved. That's the first point. In denying Jesus, Peter must have felt unworthy to be called a disciple. But the truth is, he was never worthy in the first place. That's why I think Jesus is calling him Simon here, to remind him of where he's come from. What love God has for Peter. While Peter was denying Jesus, Jesus was dying for Peter. While Peter was protecting himself, Jesus was giving himself. So what love God has for us, whether you're following him tonight or not, the first thing you need to know about the love of God is you don't deserve it and you cannot earn it. And that's the hardest thing for our proud hearts to hear. That's why the gospel is not welcome. When you try and share the gospel with someone, It's a cut to the heart because proud hearts do not want to hear the message that you don't deserve God's love. We want to earn it. When you begin to see the love of God for you, when you begin to be humbled, that's when you start to grasp God's love. Second thing is it's a love that doesn't change. I think we're so used to experiencing love that changes on this earth. We don't love each other perfectly, and it's hard. And Peter, when he was asked these questions by Jesus, he says the third time, Lord, you know everything. And I think that's important for us to remember that Jesus knows all things. He knew Peter would deny him. He knew how quick Peter would be to say lovely things and do the exact opposite. He knew the inconsistency in Peter's heart. And he knows our hearts. He knows we're quick to do the same. I don't know if anyone's seen Stars in Their Eyes. It's an old, fairly old TV show. It makes me feel old, the fact that I know about it. But it's where contestants would impersonate showbiz stars. And the famous line was, tonight, Matthew, I'm going to be blank, whoever they're going to be. And they would appear through these smoky doors, transformed, costume, makeup, everything. They'd sing. Sometimes it would be really convincing. Other times, not so much. But Peter may have felt a bit like that, because sometimes he might have felt like Simon. Sometimes he lets himself down, he lets the Lord down. Sometimes he feels like Peter on those highs when he says, you're the Christ. And we spend our life putting on performances. We do the same with God. Maybe we say, tonight, Jesus, I'm going to be a Christian. And then another night we do the exact opposite. But there's no point in putting on a show for Jesus. He knows all things. He knows your darkest secrets. He knows the thoughts that go in your mind. He knows he sees through all these showy words we put onto each other. He sees directly into our hearts. And this can be the scariest thing ever. Jesus, the holy, pure God, who's going to come and judge the world, he knows you through and through. You're exposed before him. It's scary, and it should be. But at the same time, this can be the greatest, most freeing news ever. And it was for Peter. Because although Jesus knew Peter would utterly fail him, he still loved Peter perfectly. He chose Peter before he was born. So yes, there's inconsistency in Peter's love, huge inconsistency. And there is in our love for Jesus too. But there is no inconsistency in Jesus' love for us. And thank God for that. His actions always showed his love for us. So thank God that his love for us is not like our love for him. Third, it's a love that's shockingly sacrificial. Look at the lengths he went to. Firstly, we've already seen that Jesus is God in the flesh. That means he was in perfect communion with the Father. And he chose to leave that. He took on humanity, the first low, the incarnation. He took on our humanity. He took on our weaknesses, our troubles. And then he goes lower again because he didn't become a man and just stay in heaven. He came down to earth. He wasn't born in a palace. He got his hands dirty. He was born in a stable. The closest earthly comparison that I could think of for this is the queen living among the homeless, leaving her palace. But even that doesn't do any justice to this whatsoever. And he still goes lower. He came to die, even death on a cross. We read in Philippians 2 verse 8, this is Jesus, being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death. Even death on the cross. The cross was reserved for the worst of criminals. The pain was excruciating. But we don't stop there. He still goes further. The lowest of the low. He became sin for us. In this passage, we see Peter's death for Christ described. But even here, Jesus' love shines through. Because although Peter would be led to die for Christ, Peter would never have to suffer what Jesus suffered for us. Because even in death, Jesus is with his people. They're never forsaken. But Christ, in his death for us, was left to hang alone. He cried to his Father, why have you forsaken me? He truly died alone. He became sin for us. He had to suffer the wrath that our sin deserved. Jesus knew the only solution for us was the cross. And he willingly went there because he loved us. So the fourth point about the love of Christ is it's a love that's proven. He's displayed it. We say things like, talk is cheap. If you love me, prove it. We know it's easy to say you love someone, but hard to show it. Peter experienced this. But Jesus didn't just tell us he loved us. He proved it. You read in Romans 5 verse 8. But God shows his love for us in that while we were sinners, Jesus died for us. So in light of this perfect love that I've just described, what should our response be? What should Peter's response be? That's the final point. We're going to look at the response that is required for such a love. And firstly, it's a love that demands a response, just by the nature of how great this love is. We read in 1 John 3:16, "By this we know love, that he laid his life down for us." That's the love displayed. He laid his life down for us. So we ought to lay our lives down for the brothers. There's a pattern. Love is shown to us, therefore we do this. We see this first in Peter, even in this passage. Jesus says, "Do you love me?" And then he says, "If so, go and tend my sheep, go and care for my people." And he would do it all the way to the grave, verse 18 to 19. This is a love that leads Peter to death. So this love of Christ for Peter has a high cost for Peter. But the question is it worth it? So what should our response be? Because tonight, like he did with Peter, Jesus is saying to us, "Do you love me?" And just as the question to Peter was not, "Why did you deny me?" Jesus isn't saying to you tonight, "Why didn't you come to church last week? Why haven't you read your Bible enough?" No, he asked one crucial question. Before you do anything else, do you love me? We see this even in Jesus' descriptions of the commandments of God. He says the first and greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. And he said the second is like it. You shall love your neighbour as yourself. There's an order. Love the Lord leads to loving others. And again, in this dialogue here between Jesus and Peter, both of these are in view. Both of these commandments in the same order. Do you love me? Then go and love others. Tend my sheep. As believers, we need to check our hearts and see what is driving us to serve Jesus. Is it selfish ambition? Is it really for us? If it is anything other than love for him, we will not last the course. Because loving Jesus is a high task. It means giving yourself to him all the way to death. Jesus himself said, "If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross and follow me." And according to church tradition, this is exactly what Peter did, literally, being crucified. With many believing that this is precisely the type of death that Jesus is talking about here in verse 18 to 19. But how could Peter go through with something like this when he couldn't even admit he knew Jesus to a servant girl? How can we as believers live for Christ now when our society seems to be getting more and more hostile? Yes, we're not facing nothing like death or anything like that, but we still get that patronizing pat on the back when someone finds out we're a Christian. Some of us have been cut off from family members because we've come to Christ. Some of us have truly suffered for following Christ. How can we do this when we feel so weak? Well, thankfully, the love of Jesus doesn't just demand a response from us. It actually creates the response in us. God's love actually transforms us. We saw already that in meeting Christ, Peter was a changed man, Simon to Peter. But Peter was also a different man after his denials of Jesus. That's because God's love always has a transforming effect. When we first experience it, and even as we go on to experience it more and more and more, it continues to transform us. The pattern summed up in 1 John. We love because he first loved us. Our love for Jesus is always in response to his love displayed for us. That's what separates this from any religion, any belief out there. God displayed his love for us. Any love in us is from him. Nothing is from us. Peter, in his humbling, experienced the love of Jesus to a whole new level because his sin was revealed to a whole new level. And that's what happens in our lives as Christians. There's a parallel. Jesus says, "He who is forgiven little loves little." You can imagine it the other way around. He who is forgiven much loves much. But remember, this is a work of God by his Spirit. This isn't a self-improvement program, as Dan said this morning. We see the effects of the Spirit in Peter. When the Spirit came down at Pentecost, Peter, the same man who couldn't even admit he knew Jesus to a servant girl, is now preaching boldly Jesus to this mocking crowd. And this Spirit would lead Peter all the way to his death for Jesus. But we too, as believers today, we have the same Spirit dwelling in us. The same Spirit who causes us to see and understand the love of Jesus and respond. The Spirit does all the work. Even tonight, if you're an unbeliever, you have yet to come to Christ, God can open your eyes. It's a work of God. Pray. Pray that God would speak to you. So whether you're a follower of Jesus tonight or not, the question is the same. Do you love Jesus? Who is he to you? Will you respond to his love and live for him no matter the cost? Firstly, brothers and sisters, Christians, what hope for us? Even if our lives have not reflected much so far for Jesus, there's hope that it can. But we need a meeting with Jesus like Peter had here. We need to begin with him. He's calling you to reaffirm your love for him. After every failure, after every fall, come back to him. Never give up on him, because he never gives up on you. Yes, it's true that we cannot love Jesus as we like to, and that's one of the hardest things for Christians to accept. But if we do love him, expect that it will show in your life. We will tend to sheep. We will follow him all the way to the grave if that's what it takes. Again, thank God that it is his love that keeps us and not our love for him. That's the Christian message. Now, finally, for those of you who don't know Jesus yet, he asks you a simple question again. What do you make of me? Will you love me? Everything hangs on this question. I don't know if you've seen those Marmite adverts about you either love it or you hate it. But there's a strong response either way. Similarly, there's no middle ground with Jesus. His identity and his message does not allow you to sit on the fence. You may think you're neutral to Christ, that he's a good guy, that you respect him, but his word calls you an enemy if you've not come to him through the cross. It's his cross, his death on the cross, that brings peace and friendship with God. So you're either his friend or you're his enemy. There's no middle. You're either not with him or you're with him. You either love him or you hate him. Whatever you thought about Christianity before you came in tonight, at its bare bones, it's about God's love for us and our responding love for him. Christ has shown his perfect eternal love for us. It's in the Word. We read about it. Will you spend your life living for loves that are lesser, that will only spit you out at the end? Jesus asks you this. Will you love him? He may have asked you this many times before, and you've tried to shut him out, block it. Don't wait until he returns. It will be too late. Come to him now while there's an opportunity. He's calling you even now. Will you come? Heaven or hell depends on this decision. Where do you stand with Christ? One thing for sure, for every person here, including myself, the love of Jesus, the shocking love of Jesus, the displayed love of Jesus, it demands a response from us. It demands our soul, our life, and our all. And that's why we're going to end by singing that amazing hymn by Isaac Watts, "When I Survey the Wondrous Cross." And it's that last verse that ends by saying, "Love so amazing, so divine, demands my soul, my life, my all."